It's Tuesday, October 4th, and Ketanji Brown Jackson didn't waste much time. We start here. For the first time, a black woman hears a case as a Supreme Court justice.
She wasn't talking just to talk. She went right at the heart of this case.
There were some honest-to-goodness legal headlines here, too. We'll break them all down. They got a visit from President Biden, but what they want is electricity.
More than 100,000 households are still in the dark.
What's next for Puerto Rico after another debilitating hurricane? And how many currencies need spokes-influencers?
It's not every day that you mix Kim K with the Securities and Exchange Commission, but here we are.
Why federal regulators are trying to keep up with the cryptocurrencies. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey. When the coronavirus pandemic forced virtually every American institution to close in 2020, the Supreme Court tried something new. For the first time, they telecommuted.
We'll hear argument this morning in case 1946.
For the previous 200 years, this had been an institution where if you wanted to hear what was being said in real time, you needed to go to Washington and sit down in one of the seats in the room. Well, now any American anywhere in the country could hear their debates live. Well, yesterday, the Supreme Court reconvened in person with a full house of observers, and in a huge win for transparency and for podcasters everywhere, they are continuing to live stream their audio. And with that, these nine justices started off their fall term, and they made some significant actions as they did it. ABC senior national correspondent Terry Moran starts us off. Terry, the case we're hearing about was not one that was talked about so much. It was about the EPA and the Clean Water Act. I did wonder if that meant, though, that we would get to hear from the new justice, Ketanji Brown Jackson, on the bench. Did we?
We did. You know, there's an old saying that it takes a justice at least a year to find his or her feet on the bench. But Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson just came in like one of those rookies that just wow you, right, in whatever your preferred sport is.
The objective of the statute is to ensure the chemical, physical, and biological integrity of the nation's waters.
So she joined the argument early, enthusiastically, and she wasn't asking, you know, me kind of fringe questions, third-tier questions, and she wasn't talking just to talk.
Are you saying that neighboring wetlands can't impact the quality of navigable waters?
She went right at the heart of this case, which is about wetlands under environmental laws and what counts as a wetland for protection by the government. And she was strong in her questioning and moved the discussion forward. Her point was picked up, and she did so, it sounded, you know, with a smile on her face.
Sorry. So you said several times that Riverside Bayview said at most that some wetlands could be regulated.
She's a very outgoing, courteous person. And at one point, she kind of stepped on the Chief Justice and she said, oh, I'm sorry. And he said, no, you go ahead. You can sense that this is a new justice that the other justices are going to welcome, just as you would welcome a great rookie on your team. This is somebody who's going to make the place better. And whether you agree or disagree with her, she came in ready and ready to go.
And so that case, the one they're hearing, the way this works is like now they'll go and they'll form their opinions and they'll come back with a ruling like months from now. They did, though, kind of start the day with some other collective decisions. Can you walk me through them and what it might say about this court this year?
That's right. Well, one ruling, it wasn't a ruling, it was they declined to hear the appeal of a case that involved bump stocks. Those are the devices that can be attached to a normal firing weapon, a rifle, to make it act like an automatic weapon. Right. It was the device that was used in the terrible Las Vegas shooting of a few years ago.
So that way, when he fired it, it actually, the momentum from the gun discharging actually helped him pull the trigger faster.
There were appeals on the ban on bump stock, and this Supreme Court turned those appeals down, suggesting that even after that sweeping gun rights ruling last year, there's room for regulation by the government. And that was a disappointment to Second Amendment absolutists, but this case did not go forward. Then the court also took up a case very important to the internet because it deals with Section 230, the Federal Communications Code, which basically says that those who are providing hosting services and online sites are not are not liable to be sued for the content. That's basically Twitter, right?
Oh, this is kind of the thing that Facebook and Twitter in the past have been like, well, you can't sue us. Like, we're just a platform. We're just letting other people talk.
Exactly. Whereas a publisher of a book can be sued. They're saying, we're just a utility. We're just building a platform. People walk on it or post on it. We aren't liable for it. Well, the court is definitely going to take a look at that. Hmm. And given the shifting law in this area, that could change the face of the internet and the liability of companies like Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and TikTok and all the rest. If the court's conservatives, who are very skeptical of this immunity, go in that direction.
Hey, real quick, Terry, and I wanted to ask Devin Dwyer about this yesterday, and we ran out of time, but when you look at these justices, can you tell how they feel about each other? Like, aren't they all still trying to figure out who the leaker was last term, who put out that incendiary draft of the Dobbs ruling?
Well, that is certainly still a big issue. That was a devastating blow to the court inside the court because they trust each other. They have to.
You begin to look over your shoulder. It's like kind of an infidelity. That you can explain it, but you can't undo it.
That, no doubt about it, might chill the atmosphere of not just collegiality, but of the free exchange of ideas and opinions that supposedly get you the best rulings. So there's that. But, you know, you've got nine different personalities on this court. Some of them a little pricklier, some of them a little more keep to themselves. But in general, this court, under Roberts and also under his predecessor, former Chief Justice William Rehnquist, they work to get along. Under an old tradition, like dating back to the 19th century, every day that they walk into that courtroom, just before they come out from behind the curtains, each shake each other's hand. And that probably helps. But there have been times when the court has been a scorpion's nest. This court is not. For all of the very, very sharp ideological conflicts and the way that the conservative majority is, supermajority is shifting the court rightward, you don't see, at least in public and even from behind the scenes from what we hear, the kind of nastiness that other courts have had. They work to keep it friendly.
All right, Terry Moran there in Washington. Thank you so much, Terry.
Thanks, Brad.
Next up on Start Here, different president, different day, but the same debilitated infrastructure. We go to Puerto Rico after the break. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Have you ever wondered what you would do with an extra hour in your day? I think about this all the time. I'm like, I would be so productive. I'd exercise more, or I'd read a book, or I'd take a nap, like restore myself. We often find ourselves yearning for these extra hours, but the real question is, what would you do if you were making yourself a priority? Well, how about therapy? It can help you discover what's important so you can make the most of your time. If you've ever benefited from therapy, you know how transformative it can be. It's not just for those who have experienced major trauma. Therapy empowers you to learn positive coping skills, set boundaries, and become the best version of yourself. If you're considering starting therapy, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and tailored to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire. You'll be matched with a licensed therapist. And here's the beauty of it. You can switch therapists if you're not finding the right fit. No additional charge. Take the first step. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/start here today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/start here.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
One of the questions that's been raised by Hurricane Ian is whether it will force Florida to rebuild parts of affected cities differently. In a world that is more hurricane and flood prone than ever, does our infrastructure need to change? The answer to that same question seemed alarmingly straightforward a few years ago in a different American territory.
Hurricane Maria slamming into the island, and as you heard, one official saying the island is destroyed.
When Hurricane Maria tore through Puerto Rico, leaving an entire island without power, it seemed clear at the time that infrastructure needed to change and would change. But last month, before anyone was talking about Ian, Puerto Rico was hit by Hurricane Fiona. And now, today, more than 2 weeks later, more than 100,000 people are still without power. Yesterday, President Biden went to survey the damage himself, and ABC senior White House correspondent Mary Bruce was right there with him. She's in San Juan right now. What have you been seeing, Mary?
What we are seeing is a long road to recovery. I mean, we spent a lot of time out, you know, driving up and down the streets. You do see that they've made a lot of progress. We actually spent some time with a power crew, an electrical crew that was out trying to restore some of the power lines, get people their internet access back. And one of the members of the crew told me they have been working around the clock, 12-hour days, to get everything back up and running.
Diaria, 11 horas. Muchos proyectos.
11, 12 hours a day.
Sí. Muchas horas, mucho trabajo.
And he told me that he expects it's going to take another 3 months before they'll get back to just where they were before Hurricane Fiona hit. And then we talked to other people who said, yeah, sure, you know, things are recovering, but they just don't know what is going to happen next for them.
The government is watching for the interests of the people that she cares about, but the people like her that she's forgetting.
We met one young woman who said that she basically had to run with just the things she could carry. She left everything else behind. And when she came back, when the waters finally calmed, when the rain stopped, and discovered that everything was destroyed.
Wait, Adam. It's okay.
And I have to tell you, it was just really hard to hear her story. She grew emotional describing what it was like just facing so much uncertainty. And yet she had this amazing optimism about her. You know, she said, look, I'll be fine. I'm young. You know, I have a job. I'm going to be okay. But there also was just that lingering sense of what comes next. And I asked her, you know, what's her message for Washington? And she really said that she does feel forgotten, that she feels that those in power aren't seeing people like her, that they aren't thinking about people like her. And she said that her message to the president would be to come and, you know, walk a day in her shoes, see what this feels like. And then maybe, you know, those in Washington will start acting a little differently.
Yeah, and President Biden did make the trip, at least. I don't know how many miles he's walked. But, I mean, how is it possible, Mary, that this island is still unable to provide power when we know that's a problem there? Like, at some point, is that the federal government's fault?
Yeah, it's a real interesting question. One, I'm not sure I know the answer to, right? Part of the problem here is, of course, this 1-2 punch, right? It's been 5 years since Hurricane Maria. That horrific storm battered the island, killed roughly 3,000 people.
Right.
And then, of course, after that, you know, I think we all remember those images of President Trump visiting, throwing out paper towels and other goods to some members of the community here who were desperately in need of help. But then, of course, there was also a fight.
This man has a tweet and continence problem. He should just shut up, get out of the way, and let us be.
Another tweet storm. The president lashed out at San Juan's mayor.
The Trump administration then held back some of the badly needed aid. And then, of course, 2 weeks ago, Puerto Rico gets hit again. Hurricane Fiona knocking out power across the island again. And I think it's important to remember the context of President Biden's trip, right? He said he was making this trip because he wanted to assure people, like the people that we talked to, that they have not been forgotten.
Thank you, Governor, for your partnership as we work together to help rebuild Puerto Rico. And I mean rebuild it all.
Right now, the need is still great, right? Despite that you now have more than 90% of the island has their lights turned back on, that does still mean that more than 100,000 households are still in the dark. And you do have so many whose lives have been uprooted. Now, the president trying to assure those people that change is coming. And part of that is that he's putting, you know, some money behind this. So far, the Biden administration has pledged $2 billion to help rebuild. Yesterday, he announced an additional $60 million. So they want to rebuild in a smarter, better way so that this island is in a better position to stand up to hurricanes like this.
Yeah, and President Biden also going to Florida to survey the damage from Hurricane Ian. Mary, I know you'll be on that trip with him as well. Talk to you later.
Thanks, Brad.
Do you remember the Super Bowl back in the beginning of the year? Yeah, neither do I. It was not a very competitive game. What I do remember, though, is it felt like this Rubicon crossing moment where suddenly it was just normal to advertise cryptocurrency on TV ads.
History is filled with almosts.
I can't tell you everything, but if you want to make history, you got to call your own shots.
Which is weird, right?
No one goes on TV or social media and says, hey, you know what you should do? Get some euros. Like, the value of the British pound does not rely on influencers, but apparently these very sound cryptocurrencies do.
The major fine, Kim Kardashian fined nearly $1.3 million.
Well, yesterday, the Securities and Exchange Commission, the cops for financial markets in this country, announced they were penalizing Kim Kardashian for her role in hyping up a cryptocurrency and that she agreed to pay over $1 million as a result. ABC's Elizabeth Schulze covers finance regulations. And Elizabeth, can you just, first of all, explain what happened with Kim K here?
Yeah, you know, Brad, it's not every day that you mix Kim K with the Securities and Exchange Commission, but here we are. Basically, Kim K has agreed to pay the SEC $1.26 million. This is related to charges that she basically failed to disclose that she was getting paid to promote cryptocurrency to investors. So what happened was Kim Kardashian posted on her Instagram account touting this cryptocurrency token, this digital asset. She put a post out saying that she likes this token.
The social media post had a link to the Ethereum Max website, which had instructions for potential investors about how to buy the tokens.
And she didn't reveal when she published that post that she was actually getting paid by this cryptocurrency company $250,000 to put the post up in the first place. This violates an anti-touting provision of the securities laws. Basically, you can't come out and be in favor of an asset and then be making money from it at the same time. And so Kim Kardashian has settled with the SEC. She released a statement saying that she's pleased that this has been settled. She's been fully cooperating with the agency to kind of try to get this resolved and to move on.
And how significant is that amount of money, though, Elizabeth? Like, I imagine it's a drop in the bucket for the Kardashians, right? So is there a significance to this beyond that?
Yeah, $1.2 million, not a lot for the Kardashians, a lot for the rest of us. But ultimately, she got paid $250,000. $1.2 million is a lot more than that. So this is a significant fine compared to what she was getting just for doing this in the first place. And it might be enough to have some other celebrities or influencers think twice. And frankly, Brad, there are a lot of celebrities and influencers out there posting about cryptocurrency.
Miami is the crypto queen, Paris Hilton here.
And I'm Naomi Osaka, and I'm proud to partner with FTX.
And in fact, the SEC chair said that.
Celebrity endorsements, though, don't mean that an investment product is right for you.
The SEC chair said in releasing this news about Kim K that this should be a reminder that when celebrities or influencers, if they endorse investment opportunities, it does not mean that those investment products are right for everyone. And certainly they're saying that is the case with cryptocurrency assets.
And when it comes to crypto, remember, many of these are highly speculative assets.
Well, and like you kind of hinted at here, there is this whole ecosystem right now of these like exotic digital materials that we're being told, Elizabeth, to treat like they have intrinsic value. Like, not only the cryptocurrencies, I'm thinking of like NFTs. There was recently a guy who owned a Frida Kahlo painting. He burned the painting and then he sold like 1,000 versions of that painting as NFTs to be like, look, you can own the painting that now doesn't exist anymore. But I'm sorry, is this me being a fuddy-duddy or is that a super bizarre way for an economy to work? Like, what do experts foresee here?
You know, the reality here is that regulators are getting increasingly vocal about the risks about cryptocurrency and the need for additional oversight on some of these assets, like NFTs or digital tokens or Bitcoin, whatever it is in the crypto world. There are a lot of calls to say this needs to be treated a little bit more like a regular financial asset would. In fact, we had a meeting from some of the biggest regulators here in Washington yesterday, the same day that the Kim K news came out. And all of these regulators made a call to say Congress needs to pass legislation to regulate crypto, but also that we need to kind of take a look at these assets to say, how can we better protect consumers?
Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies have taken a nosedive as interest rates rise and investors search for less risk.
Cryptocurrencies were supposed to be a hedge against the kind of economy we're experiencing right now, but now they're crashing.
When you look at the crypto market, Brad, the price of Bitcoin has been plummeting. You know, it's now around $19,000. It was triple that a year ago. And that's like $2 trillion in value wiped off of crypto. And that translates into dollars out of people's pockets who might have made investments that they weren't fully aware of the risks that they were taking on.
Well, like, what are the risks? Isn't one of the risks like there's a million different cryptocurrencies? Like, there's so many now. And it almost feels like you have people being like, oh, I'll make a cryptocurrency for funsies and maybe I'll make $1 million as long as I get my celebrity friend to do some ads, convince everyone to spend their real dollars on my digital dollars. Like that seems like something that could happen in this system, right?
It's questionable. And you have seen people lose money. You have seen companies go out of business, especially as we've seen this crypto crash. It's meant that a lot of that is just not backed up. And there are really questions for kind of the average investor out there. If you're going to put your money into this, are you taking on too much risk? Is there so much volatility in the market that you need to be better protected, that you need to have kind of some of those same rules that some of your other financial assets might fall under? And right now, that's not really the case with crypto. Some other countries have actually gone as far as to like ban crypto because they just really don't know how to regulate these assets. Frankly, the whole idea that cryptocurrency is regulated goes against what it's about. You know, Bitcoin wants to be this decentralized network, so it really wants to not be overseen by a central authority. So regulators here in Washington and around the world are really trying to figure out how they can oversee crypto. Is this an industry that has the longer term potential that they need to figure out the rules for? Do we need to make new rules? And how can we better protect consumers along the way who might get caught up in all of this and could lose a lot of money in that process?
And of course, the road to government financial policy always begins with Kim Kardashian. So we're glad you're reporting on this. Elizabeth Schulze, thank you so much.
Who else? Thanks so much, Brad.
Okay, one more quick break. When we come back, was it the unmasking he'd been waiting for, or was it all a dream? One last thing is next.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with privacy mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course. Present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again. Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is. Drawing board or...
Miro. All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.
And one last thing. There are lots of superpowers, but the common question everyone gets asked is, would you rather fly or would you rather be invisible? Well, for the last several years, lots of gamers have garnered incredible followings by remaining invisible. Their identities are anonymous. Some would even say they're popular because they're invisible. That's their superpower.
What do? Do I just, like, rip the Band-Aid off and... turn around!
Well, earlier this week, one of the most famous gamers that no one's ever seen decided to fly.
Hi, my name is Clay, otherwise known as Dream Online.
This is a guy who plays the game Minecraft, and he goes by the name Dream. Dream has 30 million subscribers. That's almost double what this year's top-rated television show has drawn. His videos have been watched more than 2 billion times, and until this week, no one knew what Dream looked like. He always wore this big smiley face mask.
It's crazy because I've been watching him for years with no face.
Over several days, hype built up around one of the most successful online marketing campaigns the gaming world has ever seen. Dream, we were told, was going to reveal his face live to the world.
Now you guys have seen my face. Question's over. What does Dream look like? This is me.
When he finally did, he looked like, well, a 23-year-old dude. White guy, big doe eyes, impressive mop of hair. He looked like, you know, a gamer. Turns out his name is Clay. But within a few hours, some other users started criticizing his looks.
It's just a guy.
His chin is too big, said some. His eyebrows make him look like a villain, said others. Soon the words, he's ugly, were trending on Twitter, which is gross. First of all, what's with judging people's appearances? Secondly, it's ironic this guy shedding his anonymity was being blasted by people who, are largely anonymous.
It's like they're posting behind, like, anime avatars about how ugly this dude is, right?
This also led to questions about whether young fans who follow gamers are so used to face-tuning filters that they've forgotten what a normal young person's face actually looks like.
I find a lot of it funny that I probably... maybe shouldn't.
Dream says as an online personality, he's used to dealing with a disturbing amount of online hate, and that regardless of the reaction, he was excited to finally attend some gaming events in real life.
Whether you think he's an angel, whether you think he's ugly, whether you think he's just some average-looking Joe Schmo,
the internet's going to dog them.
But in some ways, this example showed why so many gamers, just like artists and DJs before them, have found such strength in anonymity. When you hide your face, you could be anything. Fans can turn you into whatever hero they want to imagine. What could possibly live up to that? But in a world that is craving authenticity, it's not clear how many content creators will want to spread their wings and unmask themselves like this. I was hearing this, like, why does this speak to me so much? And I was like, wait, duh, this is what podcasting is. Like, just asking people to imagine what you look like. If you're curious about what I look like, by the way, brace yourself, then check out our Instagram at StartHereABC, or just come back here, listen, live in the mystery. I'm Brad Milkey. See you tomorrow.